Welcome to another episode of Tales from the DC Multiverse, the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and usually Travis is here with me, but apparently he is having his car tended to, and he had an appointment for a certain time, but they're delayed, and he texted that he wouldn't make it in time for recording. So our special guest and our international correspondent, Stephen Marshall, is not only going to be the guest, but he's going to be the guest co-host for tonight. So, welcome, Stephen. How are you?
I'm very good. You?
Awesome. I'm excited to chat about the Reign of the Superman animated sequel to the Death of Superman animated film. But before we do that, we have to discuss. We have to do our usual, which is comic book recommendations, and then a bit of news before we do all that. So why don't we get to it? Do you have any recommendations for this week?
I do, yeah. Do you want me to go?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. Superman American Alien by Max Landis. I got it for Christmas, and I read it recently, and I really enjoyed it. It's not your typical Superman story. It takes a few liberties, I'd say, with the choices it makes.
Yeah,
it's very much in that period between him becoming Superman, you know, like almost like the last four seasons of Smallville,
right?
In a sense,
but minus the clownocrat.
Yeah, minus the clownocrat. Yeah, there's okay. Even a prototype costume and things like that, which has a connection to Batman, which I won't spoil if you haven't read it. So
yeah, that was cool. I did read it. It's cool, yeah.
I thought it was a really interesting book. And I mean, I won't want it to be like the canon storyline, but as a non-canon Elseworlds book of kind of like a book of short stories, I would call it. I thought it was really good.
No, it was very unique. Yeah. And the art, they had four different artists, I think, each.
Yeah, that threw me a bit at first, but I think as it wore on, I started to get used to the artist changing, and I really got into it. I think my favourite issue was probably the one where he pretends to be Bruce Wayne on the boat. I thought that was...
Yeah, that was hilarious. I had a good laugh at that.
I thought it was really clever.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
No, that's a good recommendation. What I like about it is that it fills in the territory that we haven't really been told about, at least in comic book form, so it adds another layer to the story. I don't know if I'd want to see that in a movie or something such like that, but as a story that's like an Elseworlds, I think it works.
Maybe they could make it one day as one of the DC Black Label films. I'd be up for that.
That could be actually very interesting. If Joker does gangbusters, I think at the box office, I think that there are no limits to anything, really.
Yeah.
So that was a good poll, good recommendation. I'm going to do a little bit of an extra recommendation, because I have two, because I couldn't choose just one. But it's my podcast. I can do what I want. And so you're getting two recommendations from me. The first one is Superman number 7, written by Brian Michael Bendis. Basically, when he came on the book in Man of Steel, Stephen, which you haven't read yet. At the end of that, John Kent and Lois Lane went with Jor-El, who's been alive unbeknownst to us. It was told in Rebirth, but he's been alive. And so he takes John and Lois on an excursion so that John can properly mature into his, heritage as the son of Kal-El and the grandson of Jor-El. He can learn all these things from his grandfather and such. And then along the way, Lois realizes that, okay, I'm not really needed here. John's in good hands with Jor-El. I'm going to go home. So, they send her home. And a few months has gone by in story time, and John reappears. Now, what they've done is they've aged him upwards. So, my estimation, he's probably about between 15 to 17 years old. And when Superman sees him, the cool thing is, Superman goes through all the, you know, all the comic book tropes when they re-age somebody. He goes through all those options. It's kind of like making, poking fun at, you know, the comic book cliches, if you will. And so then they fly to Lois's apartment and sort of John recounts the missing months that we haven't been privy to seeing. And what we learned by the end of it is that he's come to warn Clark and Lois about the fact that Jor-El's gone insane and that they have to stop him from doing something, which we don't know what it is. But it's a pretty interesting story. And for the fans that were worried that Brian Michael Bendis was just going to come in and get rid of John Kent, their fears can be put to rest because I think he's got a big role coming up here. And it's kind of interesting because Bendis is also writing Young Justice, which has brought back Connell into the mythology, the other Superboy. And it's a different kind of Superboy that he's writing there. So to watch him sort of, you know, stretch his talent and write two different variations of Superboy, two very different Superboys as well, is kind of interesting. So that's one book I'd recommend. The other book I recommend is Hawkman number 8. And basically, the Hawkman storyline up to this point has been dealing with his, you know, it's sort of like an origin story because what they're doing is he's facing, in present day, he's facing a group of villains from his past. And to defeat them, he needs weaponry, a certain type of weaponry. And the only way he can access that is by sort of somehow traveling through his various lifetimes and finding the necessary weaponry to defeat these villains. And so in this particular issue, he travels to a time period where he was on Krypton, where a past version of himself was on Krypton. And the cool thing was about this is that he's transported right into the smack dab into the middle of Krypton's destruction. And he has to basically relate to his past self, who he's there with, that, you know, there's no way that you can save Krypton. But then, you know, and in the midst of all that sadness, he tells his past self about how, you know, baby Kal-El, who the past version of the Hawkman is aware of, becomes Superman, and how Kara survives and becomes Supergirl. And what's interesting about that is that in Krypton's past, Kara was a student of Hawkman, like a history student. And so they have a connection there. And what's really cool is that it's an emotional, like it is an emotional issue, because even like both the present day and past version of Hawkman are sort of really saddened by the fact that there's nothing they can do to save Krypton. And so that as a Superman fan, that gets you emotional. Not to the point where I'm you know, tweeting in all capital letters about needing a Kleenex and using all these ridiculous emojis. Not to that level, but you know, it does pull on the heartstrings a bit. And the other thing is, there's a line of dialogue in there about how Hawkman is kind of amazed at how Superman is so hopeful and can provide so much hope and positivity to the people of Earth, given that he, you know, in a way lost his entire civilization. And Hawkman is just floored by the fact that, you know, how can Superman do that? How can he be this beacon of hope? You know, whereas any other lesser individual would be, you know, devastated and constantly, you know, have that constantly weighing on them. So it really is a nice a look at how special, like within Hawkman's dialogue, it really shows you how special Superman is. And I really love that about the story. So if you're not reading Hawkman, I definitely recommend, read Superman, obviously, because it's great and it's Superman. But if you're not reading Hawkman, I would suggest, if you're reading, look, put it this way. If you're a Batman fan and you're reading Tom King's Batman out of obligation, and you're not a stickler for, having a 100% complete collection, and you're thinking about dropping Batman, drop it and pick up Hawkman instead. It's much more deserving of your money than Tom King's Batman run. And if you're reading Batman or buying it just because of your collection and can't drop it because you're like me and you are a stickler for having the complete collection, well then, find a way to purchase Hawkman, because it's still more deserving of your money than Tom King's Batman run. So that's my recommendations, and I hope you guys will look into them, whether you buy single issues or trade format or digital, however you purchase your comics. But with that said, Stephen, why don't we get on to some news, shall we?
Yep.
Stephen, we have Batwoman news, because the pilot episode has to start filming in, I believe, March 3rd or 4th. So casting is underway for some of the other roles. So we have an actor and two actresses. We have Megan Tandy, Cameron Johnson, and Nicole Kang. So Megan Tandy is playing a character called Sophie Moore, who used to be a military academy graduate turned private security agent. And she's also a former love interest of Kate Kane. It's a comics character. And I don't know if you know who this actress is, but apparently, let me see here. Megan Tandy is an alumni of and notice I didn't yell like an idiot into the microphone as I said alumni, but Megan Tandy is an alumni of the Teen Wolf series, the same Teen Wolf series that Tyler Hoechlin came from.
Yeah.
So that's a nice DC connection. Actor Cameron Johnson will play Luke Fox, who is the son of Lucius Fox. He is a loyalist to Batman, and he works to keep Wayne Tower secure in Bruce Wayne's absence. Luke considers himself a guardian of all things Batman, specifically his symbol, and he recognizes Gotham City's need for a new hero. And his previous roles, he was in season 2 of Luke Cage. The third addition, Nicole Kang, was in something called You, which I've never heard of.
Maybe.
But she's playing a character, Mary Hamilton. She is excitable and talkative. She is Kate Kane's stepsister and is a polar opposite of her. And she has a compassion for Gotham's underserved communities. And so that gives her something in common with Kate. So, what do you think of this? These castings. Do you know any of these actors? And what do you think about these particular characters joining the show?
Well, I watched Teen Wolf, but I don't recognize. I recognize a face. Look at her, but I don't remember in the show. So, can't remember. I don't have a clue who the other two are. I mean, I know the character Luke. Luke Fox? Did you said Luke Fox, didn't you?
Yeah, Batwing. Batwing. Yeah.
He was in Batman Bad Blood, wasn't he?
He was. That
character. Yeah, that's my only thing. Thing I know about Batwing from that film, because I knew he was in the comics, but I never read those particular comics.
Well, I read the comics in the New 52. I actually really enjoyed those.
And is he still in the comics, that character, or is he?
Well, they're not really doing anything with him right now, which is a shame. I'm hoping that I'm hope against hope that when they relaunch Batman and the Outsiders, that he's part of it. I hope. I think that would.
Yeah,
be
good. is that like the with like Red Hood and all that sort of thing? And
no, it's,
was he in it?
The core team is going to be Cassandra Cain. Who is, you know, then we're going to have Katana is going to be part of it.
Yeah, she was in it in the animated show, aren't you, Brave and the Bold?
Yes, so she's in it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of a couple of the other team members. The Batman's new sidekick, The Signal, is going to be in it. I think that character is a waste, personally. I think you could just have I think you could just have Batwing. As part of it and not him. I mean, it really is, you know, I'm not a fan of that character, but that's Tom King created that character, so. Well, actually, Scott Snyder did, but then Tom King ruined it. That's why I don't like him, because the way Tom King wrote him.
Tom King reminds me of something. Is it Batcat Forever or something?
Yeah, that's the crap he's famous for. But yeah, so do you think, okay, let me ask you this question. Do you think that Luke Fox will eventually become Batwing?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Okay, yeah.
You know what CW shows like as well? They can't just have one superhero.
The only question is, how long does it take? Because I could see him being the guy in the, you know, the quote-unquote guy in the chair for three quarters of
a bit like...
like Cisco. Type thing, right? Yeah.
Yeah, like a Cisco. Yeah. So he'll create her tech and...
Yeah, exactly. Like his father.
The wind, and like Wind did, yeah. I think they tend to do stuff a lot faster than you think, the CW shows. Like, I always I'm watching first season of Arrow thinking, oh, they'll drag this bit out till episode whatever, and then they didn't. They, like, sold it in, like, two episodes. So maybe it'll happen quicker than you think.
Yeah, but I'm betting it'll probably... for sure, by the season finale, that's when it'll...
Yeah,
we'll see in the full blown of it. Yeah. but no, it's cool, and but your level of excitement for this show, where's it at? Where's it?
Very high, because I at the minute the CW shows, I'm finding them a bit hard to watch. Like Supergirl, at the minute, it's kind of getting on my nerves a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Finding it, I think Supergirl's gonna. It's a bit dull sometimes. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and I've almost feel like it's got a bit stale, and I think Batwoman will really freshen it up, and it's, we ain't got like that kind of hero, have we, in the, you know, like this female, and she's going to be like tough and all that. And I hope that, because one thing about Supergirl that bothers me, because I'm comparing it, because it's obviously the other female led
show.
I feel like sometimes she's pushed in background a bit too much.
Yeah.
So I hope in Batwoman that the focus stays on Kate Kane with that character.
Agreed. It definitely should. Yeah. But
so I'm really excited anyway.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it for sure. 100%. And by the way, you mentioned Supergirl. We didn't talk about this piece of news, but that's a good segue. We got our first look at John Cryer as Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
What did you think of that image?
Yeah, I thought it was good. A few people I know have complained about the beard, but I'm like, well, he's in prison, isn't he? He's... You know what I mean? And I think comic fans will always find something to complain about.
Didn't he have a beard during the Death and Return of Superman story? I mean, he had red hair.
Well, yeah, he had a whole different accent.
Yeah, so...
But it's like, I think Lex Luthor in Crisis on Infinite Earths, when you meet an alternate world one, he's got a beard.
Yeah.
I think he's on a planet with a crime syndicate. That Earth, I mean, not planet.
Yeah. Well, look, I'll tell you this. I love the image. And I got to say, he looks very imposing and menacing and just underhanded. And you know what? I better not say it. I'm not gonna say what I wanted to say, but I'm gonna leave it at that. I'm not gonna insult any other version of Lex Luthor that may or may not feed Jolly Ranchers to U.S. government agents or piss in a jar. I'm not gonna do that, even though I just kind of did. But looking at him, I'm on board. I can't wait to see what he does with it. I can't wait.
Yeah, I think he's gonna surprise people.
Yeah.
Because on first Dave and I were like, really?
Yeah, I mean, but on paper, you're like John Cryer, the comedian. Yeah.
But then you look at this picture and it's like, it looks sinister and it looks serious. And
yeah, I don't even see John Cryer. I see
no
Lex Luthor. Like it's
yeah.
He's
a very good actor.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah. Comedians can do serious. I mean, shocking, as shocking as that may sound, it's true. So all great news, all things we're looking forward to. But let's get down to the business of our main review, which is the Reign of the Superman animated film, which is the sequel to The Death of Superman. So, Steven, just give us a quick rundown of what the movie was about for those that may have never heard of The Death of Superman.
Well, if you haven't seen The Death of Superman, Superman sadly died at the end of that one.
Yeah, spoiler, he's dead.
So this film is four Supermen show up, and it's a case of, is any of them the real one? Are they not? Superman's dead, but he may or may not return.
Possibly, it's a good chance.
I mean, I could, if you actually want me to read the...
read the synopsis. Do you have the synopsis there?
I can get it up in like 2 seconds. Sorry.
All right, yeah, let's pull it up. Let's make it easier and pull up the synopsis. I should have done that. I had the news in front of me and I didn't...
Okay, yeah. So it's not a long one. In fact, I think mine sounded better.
Probably.
After the genre, right, so it's only one line. I should have got it to guess, sorry. Forgot about that.
I know, good ones.
After the death of Superman, several new people present themselves as possible successors. I think mine was better.
Well, there we go. So, I guess I'll start us off with my thoughts. Overall, I really, really like, really, really like this. I think, for me, they did a really good job of giving every one of the four Supermen a chance to shine. And I like the way, like, they had an opening montage of all four of them saving the day, right? And trying to fill the void that Superman left. I think what I also liked was, Lois's sort of hesitancy to believe that any of these four were Superman. Like, she didn't believe, but at the same time, she wanted to. Like, you could see that. That duality in her emotions of not believing but wanting to. I enjoyed all four of the Supermen, but I think my top two favorites were probably Superboy and Steel. Mm. That were my two takeaways, because they had that. Both of them had like a personal connection to Superman. Like, Superman had saved John Henry Irons, and then and then Superboy is part of Superman. He's a clone. And so I think their personal connections to Superman made those two characters more, you know, stronger, have more of a stronger impact. At least to me personally.
No, I totally agree. Totally agree.
And I like the way, I like how Lois, you know, it's funny because she can figure out that John Henry is steel right away. And he's got like, you know, armor and a friggin'
yeah.
faceplate mask on. But she can't put to, like, until Superman tells her, she can't put together that he's Clark and Superman.
Like, you think that might be more because she knew Clark, though, and she knew John Henry, but not, like, personally, whereas Clark, she almost had, like, a blinder on in the sense that she couldn't believe this guy was Superman, whereas John Henry Irons, I think she said she's interviewed him for something, she said, doesn't she?
Yeah,
so I think she's only met him, like, a couple of times or something, so maybe that's why she can put that connect that there, because she knows, she doesn't know him that well, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No. It's a good point. I just found it funny at how quickly, like it was boom right away. So what was your, like, who was your standout? Who were your favorites of the four?
Definitely Superboy, because I've been a big fan of that character ever since I read The Death of Superman and Return of Superman as a kid. And I think I like that because Connor Kent, we've obviously got One Young Justice, and it's a very serious take. I kind of appreciate seeing this version, which is my favourite version of Superboy from the comics, where he's a bit more, what's the word, juvenile, might be the good word to use.
And
it was good to see him. So he's EO number one. I think number two for me, just, and it's a bit of bias, I love the Eradicator and I've always liked him. And I just think the way he looks is, like, absolutely fantastic. And the way that the size of the S on his chest and the way the colours pop. So
yeah. No, he was good too.
But Steel, I love Steel as well, because I remember Mike Carlin said he was the one who had the spirit of Superman.
Mm.
And I think that is absolutely spot on description of Steel.
Especially when you see the movie. It's very true.
Yeah, and he obviously, he was inspired, wasn't he? Because in Throne of Atlantis, he saves him, doesn't he? From the Atlanteans. So I think maybe he thought...
Yes, yeah.
They obviously brought him back, and I think so obviously to him, he feels like he has to replace Superman because Superman's not there anymore.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
No, good choice. I mean, everybody's going to have a different opinion.
Yeah, of course.
But they're all... like I said, they're all great. I just think... And they all got a chance to shine, but I think those two, Superboy and Steel, really had the spotlight, I think.
Yeah, I think if you're talking characterizations, I'd definitely agree with you, but from a pure bias point of view, that I just love the look of the Eradicator. That's why he was my second favorite, yeah.
And I mean, yes, you know, Cyborg Superman, Hank Henshaw, had the spotlight as well, because he was sort of the how can I put this, in air quotes, main villain, if you will.
Right. Well, I think if you didn't know this story, I think he's the one you'd think was Superman.
The way they presented him, yes. For sure.
And I've never liked his character in comics, to be honest, because I think after Return of Superman, I think he showed up way too much. And he seemed to be invincible.
But there is...
This is the first time I've liked him.
I will agree in parts with you there.
Mm.
There is a run of the Green Lantern Corps.
And he
showed up there, and it was really well done there. Like his history with Hal Jordan after the fact, like Hal Jordan and the Green Lanterns made better use of him than the Superman books did.
Totally agree. Yeah. In fact, doesn't he? He wants to die in that story, doesn't he?
At one point, yes.
Yeah, because I remember, because he's still alive at one point, and he's got tears in his eyes, isn't he? Because he can't die.
Yeah. Yes. And I think one of the things I think they did, like, it was one moment that really stuck out to me, was it was a brief moment, but where Lois is in, I think it's Clark's apartment. And, you know, she's packing up stuff. And Martha and Jonathan come in. And there's just one moment where Lois breaks down and Jonathan and Martha, yes, I said that name, are...
Why did you say that name?
Every time. It's never going to get old. 20 years from now, when we still don't have the Snyder Cut, this is what we'll be talking about. in all seriousness, that moment was very powerful when she breaks down and you know, both of them embrace Lois as if she's already part of the family. And they kind of grieve together. And they help her out, like, you know, Martha says something about the fact that that's not my son, I know. And then Lois figures, I know how to figure out which one of them is him. And she asked him what was
yeah.
him. You know, and she asked all four of them, except for Superboy, who she figures already, like, this guy.
Yeah.
This ain't it. That ain't it.
He still tries his luck over there, don't he?
Oh, well,
she's like, how old are you? And he's like, old enough.
Yeah. Well, and I can't blame him.
No.
I mean, after all, that is Rebecca Romijn, so...
Yeah.
If I was a raging, you know, a teenager with raging hormones, I'd hit on her too. Let's be honest, I'd probably hit her now as an adult. So, and yes, she is one of my multiverse. Earth-wise, I just haven't given her a number. Give it time.
There's too many.
I've started to make a list. So there is a list.
Good. So you're not a bigger miss than any of these, so
yeah. Yeah, that's right. No. it's one per Earth. So I like the fact that how she determined to put that together. That was cool. What did you think of? Because I thought what I liked about this movie was that it stuck to the spirit of the story. And yeah. a lot of it was very genuine to and followed the beats of the comic story.
Mm.
But then it took its own spin on the material by having the grand puppeteer, if you will, behind the scenes, being Darkseid.
Yeah.
What did you think of all that? How did that play out for you?
I absolutely loved it. I think it was actually... don't get me wrong, I loved the comic, but I actually think it was an improvement because I think it made more sense with what was happening. And of course, as well, the benefit of this pair of films is they came after the comic, so they were able to make a more tight-knit, close story. And I think just the way they got tied everything together just into like a little bow just worked perfectly for me. Because it's Mongol, is it? Mongol's in the original story, and he's kind of like a bit of a lackey for Cyborg Superman, but I think in this story, at least we get a good explanation as to why Hank Henshaw is the Cyborg Superman.
Yeah.
And obviously Darkseid, and it also follows on from Justice League War, is trying again, to try and invade again, so...
Yeah, I love that there's a continuity there. Like
me too. I think another thing with the continuity is, from the previous films, is you got the chance to care about Superman, where, not to disrespect the Snyder Universe, because I do like it, like I've said, but I feel like
there wasn't
enough time to care that much about that Superman, if that makes sense.
I 100%
by the point he dies. Yeah,
I 100% agree with that.
I think you really felt it, and then obviously when he comes back, spoilers. It's like I think it's quite emotional when he actually does come back, and it's the dark element was fantastic.
I mean, it just adds a different element of grand scale to the proceedings, and. Yeah. Like the fact that he was responsible for Doomsday.
Yeah, that was good. That was like, a good
that's
twist it,
that's
as well.
Ingenious to me because
yeah,
to me Darkseid is the ultimate DC villain.
I agree.
Okay, so to have him have his hands in all this is just pure genius, and there's an extra payoff to it when you've watched Justice League War.
Mm.
Cyborg Superman's external motivations of of blaming Superman for the wife, for not being there for when the wife died, that all still is intact and it all makes sense, but it just, it's got that added, it's got an added, with the dark side inclusion. Because I always felt in the comic that Cyborg Superman kind of came out of nowhere in a way, right? Whereas here now, there's more of a purpose.
And as well, the story that he was in originally, which was like a take on the Fantastic Four goes bad, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
That was so far before that story. He would have had to have had a hell of a memory to remember that.
Yeah,
at the time as well.
Yeah.
So, and obviously, the comics are different, aren't they? It's a different medium, and they probably can do that sort of thing. Whereas in a film, you've got to kind of set everything up.
But I also like I said, I love that we get straight up adaptations. But I love also when they add a little bit of their own mix to it, because, like I said, I love the comic, the Death and Return of Superman, but I think this, the inclusion of the dark side and all this, works better.
I agree, yeah.
Adds to the story. And I'll use this comparison. Like, Batman Year One is a great comic story. I love the comic. As a movie, it bored me to tears.
Yeah, I agree, yeah. And it's not that adaptations don't work, because some of them do, but I think sometimes they just don't translate, and that didn't translate that one.
Like, All-Star Superman was a genius.
Exactly. And as well, they took some liberties with that, didn't they? You had to trim some stuff, and it worked. And I think sometimes you don't want to see a straight up adaptation all the time, because then you know what's going to happen beat for beat, don't you? Whereas with this, for example, they changed enough of it that you kind of almost didn't know what were going to happen, and in parts.
Yeah, no. And I love the element of surprise, because if you're just going through the motion and okay, here comes this, here comes it, kind of. I mean, it's cool to watch it on, like, the comic come to life, but you do want some element of surprise.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
With these movies. Now, having said that, when they do Red Sun, if they do a straight-up adaptation of Red Sun, I ain't going to complain.
No. Well, Dark Knight Returns worked perfectly, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it did. And let's go back for a second and talk about Superboy, because I love the way they did, you know, Lex exerting some kind of control over him, like he's property.
Yeah.
And then how they actually do the reveal, like, it's revealed to Superboy who he is, like, what he is, and, like, his reaction was one of shock in points, right?
Yeah,
but then he doesn't really have time to dwell on it because of the severity of the situation, like of what they're dealing with.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering now, going forward, if they include, because this is the first time we're seeing Superboy in this. In this series of movies, right?
Yeah.
So I wonder now if they'll include him in stuff like, if they do any more Teen Titans movies, maybe include him in that.
I think so.
That would be cool. And what I now like to see going forward with the fallout with that character is him processing that.
Yeah.
And what that means. You know what I'm saying? So
we got, in the comics, we didn't know his origin for ages, did you? You didn't know that he was like a clone of Lex and Superman.
And because this universe has Damian, I'd love to see him interact with Damian. I would as well.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. I'm not a massive Damian Wayne fan, but he's kind of grown on me as the films have gone a bit.
Damian being a prick.
Yeah.
And Superboy having a bit of an attitude of his own.
Yeah.
I'd really like to see that dynamic play out on screen. So I think that'll be...
They could almost do Super Sons, but not. It's obviously not going to be John.
Right, but I'd watch that movie. Like, if they did
Super Sons, I would.
With Damian and Connell.
Wait, he does call Superman Dad.
Yeah.
At one point.
And it's like, you know what I loved about it? And again, it was different. It's a total 180 from Wei Young, and I'm not saying Wei Young Justice did was wrong, because I love Wei Young Justice.
I was thinking the same thing. Yeah, yeah. I thought you were gonna say.
But it's a total 180, because where Superman is like,
he's a pricking Young Justice, isn't he? That's fair.
Yeah, and he's like, and he's like, what do I do with this punk? What do I do with this kid?
Whereas like
when he says that, he almost gives him the people's eyebrow, which I kind of started laughing. And it's like, well, all right, he's mine. And like when he gets Lex on, when he communicates with Lex, send the boy to me, and he's like, no, the boy stays with me.
Yeah, I love that moment. Yeah,
it's just like Superman taking responsibility, and that's what I'd expect Superman to do.
Yep. Totally. That's my one complaint about Young Justice. I don't feel like that was a Superman move.
Because when Batman is sitting you down at a diner and saying, Clark, you got to take responsibility for this kid. You're being a prick. When Batman is telling you're being a prick.
Yeah, that
is... Chances are, you're being a prick.
Yeah, 100%.
To me, Superman's reaction here, it made me smile.
Yeah,
it really did. And in spoilers, I love the comment at the end where they send them. They already have him hold up with the Kents.
Yeah.
And there's that line by Lois. She's like, "Oh boy, they're gonna eat him alive." and her and Clark are kind of having a laugh over it. That was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But you know what? They did a good job of, because we had the four Supermen, I think they did a good job of minimizing the Justice League in this. Because if you had the Justice League in it full stop, that would have been way too much going on.
Yeah, and I think as well the Cyborg Superman subplot with the creating the army, he wouldn't have been able to create the army without the Justice League disappearing, so it all ties in. Which he obviously sets up the Justice League disappearing, doesn't he? But
yeah,
you have to have that moment to create that army.
Yeah, but that was all due to Darkseid, right? They were trapped.
It was all a plan, wasn't it, to get so Darkseid could invade Earth again.
Yeah, because he figured Superman is gone. Now we'll get rid of these guys.
Yeah, and then we'll introduce these guys. Will bring me here. Yeah.
My only thing is, I wish Hawkman would talk. Like, the guy was
in two... never talks, does he?
The guy was in two damn movies, didn't say a word. I'm like, can we get this guy some dialogue? You know, like...
They should get Hulk Hogan to voice him.
That would be...
I think he'd have a good voice for it, you know what I mean?
I can just imagine Hawkman saying, what you gonna do, brother? When my mace runs wild on you, oh, God. That would be...
Rips it. He's just got a shirt on and rips it off.
But no, that would be funny. But seriously, on a side note, I think Hawkman should get his own animated film.
Oh, I'd love that. Yeah, you could even do a Justice League film, couldn't you, like you did Thor of Atlantis?
No, but it should be based on the current run. I've got a mad love for this comic, but it should be based on the first graphic novel or collected edition of the Hawkman, the current Hawkman story. I think it'd be great.
Yeah, they should do a live action film as well.
Oh, I would love that. Like Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
With time travel or not time travel. Indiana Jones with reincarnation thrown into the mix. I think that would be fabulous. So the sky's the limit, you know.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
The sky's the limit for Hawkman, so get on that.
Literally.
You know, hell. Give us a DC Universe streaming show. I'll take that. I mean...
Oh, yeah.
If they can make it work on...
Why was the cast someone better than the other cast on Legends?
Oh, that was... Yeah. No, but if they can make him work on Smallville and Legends, surely with the budget of a streaming show, I think they can make it work.
Oh, yeah. Definitely, yeah.
But aside from Hawkman, I did love the parts of the Justice League where the Wonder Woman elements... where, you know, she goes and meets Lois and they have that conversation.
Mm.
And, you know, I think one of them says, oh, you didn't call me here because you needed somebody to grieve? And Ross is like, no, not really. I just want to know about the Force. And all of a sudden, you have one of them like, thank Hera, I'm not really good at that.
that was funny. Yeah.
And then, you know, they bring up the fact that Wonder Woman and Superman had a relationship. Like, I like that they're dealing with that and they're not sweeping it under the rug.
Yeah.
But it's not becoming this thing where it's a love triangle. Like, he's with Lois now.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That, you know, okay, let me rephrase. Let me set the stage. I never had a problem with the Superman Wonder Woman relationship in the New 52. That was one of the better things that came out of the New 52 with Superman, because mm-hmm. I thought the majority of Superman in the New 52 was horrendous. I'm sorry to say, with the exception of Grant Morrison's first, you know, a handful of issues on Action Comics.
Yeah, I'm gonna say that first issue of Action Comics is one of my favorite.
I think the first story arc, like the first five or six,
yeah,
was fantastic. But like the actual Superman title was terrible.
Yeah, it wasn't very good at all.
You know, my favorite story regarding Superman in the New 52 were the first six issues of Action and the Superman Wonder Woman title. Because I said to myself, okay, if Lois and Superman aren't going to be together in this new status quo, the only other person I could see him being in a relationship that works with would be Wonder Woman. Not to shatter anybody's dreams. But Wonder Woman. If it's not Lois, it's Wonder Woman. But anyway, so they have Wonder Woman, or they have Lois now, and they're not making it into some stupid love triangle BS. It's none of that. You know, these two women are acting like two mature adults.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then they develop a friendship. But like, I love the fact, like the little thing about with the ice cream at the end, and how they carry that over from Justice League War. How, you know, Wonder Woman loves ice cream, right? And that was also in the Wonder Woman.
Oh
movie.
Yeah, they did carry that over, didn't that? Was that was quite a nice little nod. That.
Yeah, it was a nice little bit, which was cool. And then
he does the
she does the twirl, the Linda Carter twirl, which was cool.
Yeah, I saw this in the cinema, and that bit was really loud.
Okay.
For some reason, and when she heard the noise and she changed, I was I jumped out of my seat a little bit with that loud.
But it was, and I like the way Rosario Dawson plays Wonder Woman. Like, I like her. Like, she got a good voice for it.
Yeah.
It is Rosario Dawson, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it was Michelle. Is it Monaghan in the first in Justice League War? But then Rosario Dawson's done it ever since.
Yeah. No, I like her. You know, I want her in the live action DC. I don't know as who, but I do.
Rosario She's great. Sure, yeah.
I know they're never gonna do it, but like if they ever did a Vixen, they should make a great Vixen.
That'd be good.
Or you know what? Hell, if they wanna, I'm not gonna get bent out of shape over this, because I don't mind it. If they wanna give her like a role like Zatanna or something, I'm cool with that.
Yeah, why not?
Or hell, you know what? If they do bring Catwoman into this universe, and they have a Batman that is. Close in age to her, I could see her as a Catwoman.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah,
you know, my only requirement to bringing Catwoman into the universe is Matt Reeves, if you're listening, which you're probably not. And I know you're not an immature individual, so but just in case, if you do bring Catwoman into any one of your three films, don't employ that Batcat garbage. You want to have him in a relationship, fine. But they're two grown adults. Like, cut it out with the backhand garbage. But yeah. So Rosario Dawson does a good job as Wonder Woman, and I like that part of it. What I really want to key in on is, I really love how it's been a while since I read the comic, but I think the resurrection was pretty much the same way in the comic with the regeneration. What was it? The regeneration matrix.
Yeah, it was slightly different, but it was pretty much similar, because I think in the comic
was the ship part of it or not?
No, there was like this birthing. I think in the original comic, he came in a birthing matrix, didn't he? In the Burn series, I think it was another birth matrix, and I think in the comic though, Eradicator doesn't know that he's not Superman. I think he thinks he is at first, and he I don't think he knows that Kal-El's drawing energy from him either, does he? Pretty sure that's right.
Yeah.
I love the way they did that, actually, all that sort of stuff.
In the burn run.
Well, I mean in this film, sorry.
Oh, in the film, the
way they did it, I thought it was really clever.
Yeah, with the ship. So to me,
yeah,
the sense I got was that was his ship as a baby, like his.
Yeah, well, it was in the first part, wasn't it?
Yeah, where he showed the hologram. So it is.
Yeah, and the hologram was Eradicator, wasn't it?
It is the same ship.
Yeah.
So, and I like that part of it. And I like the fact that they went, you know, they gave him some facial hair, which was cool when he came out.
On the black suit.
Yeah, and the black suit. So all you people that are upset that you didn't get the black suit, we've gotten the black suit twice now in the Arrowverse. And now this animated film. The one thing, like, I like the fact that he had the long hair because it mirrored the comics, but it just looked a little off in animation.
Yeah, and I don't think it worked on that head shape.
Yeah,
it looks a bit weird, didn't it?
I think it was the style of hair.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I hated it in the comics when he kept the hair afterwards as well.
No, but I think long hair could have worked for this movie. It just not that style. I mean,
yeah.
what they should have done, okay, is hire John Peters for what he's actually good at, which is hairstyling, and have him consult on the animation of the hairstyle. That would have been a better use of his time as opposed to what?
He probably would have had a whole scene where the hair like came alive and fought polar bears.
Okay, can we have a polar bear and have the hair sort of stand up and be like, super invulnerable and fight polar bear. I can just see it. And then a giant spider for the fun of it. Maybe that's how Superman fights his hair. He fights a giant spider and the tentacles of the spider cut it, you know.
Become his hair.
Cut his hair. No, they cut his hair to a normal. I don't know. Who knows? And I love the way they played with the Superman Lives and Superman Returns titles in the newspapers. That was cool. Let's talk a little bit about the main, because I think there was really three big fight sequences, right? There was the one where all the different Supermen fight each other.
That's when the Eradicator goes to eradicate Lex.
Yeah.
And let's go
through them. It was Superman. It was the Supermen fighting each other that we were just about to talk about.
Yeah.
It was the Steel versus
in the Fortress. The
Eradicator fight in the Fortress. And then it was the Superman and
Cyborg. Yeah.
So that first fight where they all fought, all the arena, the Superman fought, that was great.
Like, yeah, that's my favorite part of the film, actually.
And the way, like, there's the one part where they're flying and they're hitting each other in the glass, the way the glass breaks. That was so well done.
Yeah, brilliant. And I like that the Eradicator, he doesn't quite understand what justice is, does he? He thinks it's simple as you're guilty, I'm going to kill you, and it's not. But he doesn't realize it's like all due process and all that stuff.
He's like the Punisher with
Superman. He's so cool. He's like, that's really cool.
I wish they did more with that character in the comics.
Yeah, did you see that short film that I can't remember, Blinky Productions made? The Eradicator.
Is it a fan film or something?
Yeah, it's good though.
I have to check it out. I haven't seen it. Yeah.
It's a little bit like, you know, when you introduce a Superboy in this scene, it's all in an alleyway. It's a little bit like that. But
okay, well, if you have a link, send me the link.
But yeah, I like that he's obviously cut, and then Superboy is having none of it, is he?
Yeah.
He's just like, and I kind of like how cocky Superboy is.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when he flies up and everything, he's gone, and he's like, yeah, you better run or something. And then he comes back and he's like, oh no.
and then what I loved about it was they did, and then like so John Henry Irons is Steel's the last one to enter the fray. And they made him a bad, like, they made John Henry a badass in this movie. Like, he's...
Yeah. He's well, he said Superboy, didn't he? He's not in the last one, is he? He's the third one.
I think so, yeah.
Because then Cyborg shows up, doesn't he, after
Cyborg? Oh, yeah, sorry, that's right. But what was cool is, to me, to create Cyborg for this movie, they basically made him Iron Man meets Thor. Wouldn't you say that's a fair comparison?
With Steel?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
And I'm like, okay, now give me a comic with that. Give me a monthly comic with Steel like that. I'll read it.
Yeah, I'd watch a film.
Without question. Yeah, no, but look, you we're laughing, but we're serious. If Supergirl does well, I'm talking about the film now, I'm taking a segue. If Supergirl does well, look, I think you can do a Steel film.
Mm. And they won't have to cost a lot.
No. I think you could do a Steel film for the price of the first Iron Man film.
If you read the comic as well, Return of Superman, he's got this whole subplot with the White Rabbit.
Yeah.
You could maybe just do something with that.
Yeah. But see, they actually have to connect it this time, unlike the Shaq movie. Stupid. Terrible. Connect it to friggin' Superman.
Definitely.
Or if you wanna piggyback him to the Supergirl movie, connect him to her. Maybe instead of Superman, she saves. You know, because if Supergirl's kind of rebooting things, maybe she saves him. Right? Who knows? But what I'm saying is, I think if Supergirl works, I think we are going to see sort of the super family sort of get the film treatment, because it seems like that's what they're doing with Batman, with, you know, DC films. They're doing Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
And they're doing Batgirl. So I think that's the route they're going to take if Supergirl works. And I'd love to see a full-blown, like Steel. I think Steel, if you have the super fat, like the crypto, let's say, call it the Kryptonian connection, be it Superman or Supergirl, will work better as a film than Cyborg. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, I do 100%. Yeah.
And again, you take the angle of the mix of Iron Man meets Thor with the hammer and all that, and I think you've got something there. I really do, and so. Yeah, so that opening fight was great, especially my favorite part of it was the glass break. That scene was great. And that's something visually, look, I got to give credit where the credit is due. That's a Zack Snyder visual.
There's loads of it in this film.
Nobody's going to complain about Zack Snyder's visuals. They're phenomenal.
In a perfect world, you'd have him coming in to do the visuals and somebody else would be directing the acting and writing the story and stuff.
Yeah, like if he was like the the action, like directing the action scenes.
Yeah,
100%. Yeah. So that fight was great. The one with the Eradicator and Steel in the fortress. Every time people, whether it's live action or animation, when they fight in the fortress, I feel so bad for that location. It gets so torn up in this. It's like every friggin' incarnation. They just, like, Smallville did it.
Yeah, well, at least it's crystals in this again, so the crystals can regrow.
Yeah, well, that's true. And so, it was cool, and it shows you the contrast of the fighting styles of Eradicator and how methodical and machine-like and Terminator-like. It really is a Terminator, if you think about it.
Yeah, definitely.
And compared to Steel, right? And so... that fight was unique, but the final fight was just with Superman and Cyber Superman, and the fact that it was in the Watchtower, or what would become the Justice League.
That was really clever. I thought
it's going to be the Justice League. Is a great use of that location, and I love the fact that Lois is in the mix.
Yeah,
and she's right in the thick of things. And notice she's never the damsel in distress.
Well, she saves him, don't she, really?
Yeah, like she risks her life. Like she gets shot twice by Cyborg Superman.
Yeah.
And she's the one who opens the hatch to let the sunlight in.
Yeah, I knew that was coming as well when they went into space. I thought the sun, they're going to get the sun in this bit. And his eyes going red, that was very much like Batman vs Superman, wasn't it?
Yes, and when he's like, yeah. when Cyborg Superman's like, open your eyes.
Yeah, I love that bit, yeah. And I knew it was coming, but it was good.
And then the part where, see again, Superman, for anybody that's going to say, see, look, Superman killed in this movie too. No, he didn't. All he did was when he stabs Cyborg Superman in the head.
Yeah.
With the crystal. He's not killing him. All it is severing the connection between Darkseid and Hank Henshaw.
Yeah.
Because you see Hank Henshaw afterwards. Because I've seen some misinterpretations of, look, Superman killed in this too. No. So I just want to make that clear. But yeah, I love Supergirl. I love Lois's involvement. And
I think she's kind of like the main. She's like, it's like her film.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I think they did her so well in this movie. And I love Rebecca Romijn as the voice. There's an element what's the word I'm looking for? Experience, gravitas, toughness to her that I really like.
I think you believe she's Lois.
Yeah, like you don't question it.
Like, see, I've heard complaints about her and Rainn Wilson as Lex, and I absolutely love both of them as the voices.
Oh, I've got zero problems with either of them. And just to comment on Lex, the way he treats Superboy. If you don't want to punch Lex in the face after this movie, then I don't know what's wrong with you.
He's horrible in this film, isn't it? Like poor Mercy Graves as well when he throws her in front of.
Yeah, like what a jackass! It's like, really big. But let's be honest, that pales in comparison to what Lex did to her in BVS.
Yeah.
Because she probably
there's no Granny's Peach tea though this time.
Well, but let's figure it out. let's assume she probably had to carry the jar of piss into the courtroom. So there's that. He subjected her to that, and then he's like, "By the way, you're gonna die. You're gonna sacrifice yourself."
What you didn't see was there was a cutscene where the jar exploded and went in Messi's face as well.
Oh, that's just bro. That's just nasty. I wasn't going that far, Steven. You went way too extreme with that.
I'm gonna have some Snyderholics on my case out when I get back on Twitter.
Yeah, good. Get off of my case and get on to Steven's case. But no, so I've never had any problem with either of those, so I think they're great. But did you notice, Steven, that a couple things about the ending. So I love the fact that we had Clark, you know, on the news, Clark and Superman together, and Martian Manhunter.
Yeah.
Which one was he impersonating?
He was Superman.
Okay, I figured that. Okay.
Yeah, because in the comic, it's Supergirl in it who plays Clark, because it's that Matrix Supergirl who can morph into different people.
Yeah.
So in the comic, she actually is Clark, but I suppose in the comic as well, he get a mother box, gives him his suit back and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit different anyway.
Yeah, so, but I love that bit where he's like, you know, Martian Manhunter sounds nothing like me. That was so.
It was cleverly done, wasn't it? Because it was like a bit robotic and his delivery, yeah.
Yeah, it was like, it sounded very, you could almost tell that he was doing a performance.
Yeah,
like that,
yeah.
The Martian Manhunter was acting, where it felt unnatural.
Did you notice he was slightly taller as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was obviously an intentional decision.
And then the part of the when Lois calls him, and then she's like, "You're late," and then She's like, oh, tell Lois I'll see her Friday.
Yeah.
The whole bit about worlds colliding.
Yeah.
I'm like, did they just turn, I mean this in a good way, but did they just turn Superman into George Costanza from Seinfeld? Because that's all I kept thinking when he started saying worlds colliding. Which I guess would be a nice nod, because Seinfeld is a massive Superman fan, right?
Oh, yeah. There was a Superman magnet on the fridge on the throughout the entire...
Oh, he had a statue, and yeah. I remember every episode I watched, I'm like, I want that statue. And I think I have something similar. That's not exactly similar. I have a Superman versus Darkseid statue, but anyway.
Oh, nice.
But I like that moment. That was funny. And then the ending. I love the ending of this movie because it combined, to me, it was a nod to the ending of Justice League when Superman's running in the alley and rips open his shirt.
Yeah.
And then the ending of Superman the movie when he flies into space.
I thought the same thing.
And he comes towards the camera and you see him smile.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, they did both. They sat us with this end.
Yeah. Why is he smiling?
No. But with this ending, they satisfied the Snyder fans and the Donner fans.
Yeah, but the Snyder fans will still moan about it because he's smiling.
Of course they will.
glad they changed the costume as well. Superman's costume at the end, it's not the same. Because it's the new 52 costume in Death of Superman. And then it's like when he comes back, he has a new costume.
It's like the rebirth one. Yeah.
And it's even got the yellow S on the back. And I called that when I watched Death of Superman. I thought, when he comes back, he's going to have a different suit.
Yeah.
They obviously updated it. So I appreciated that.
You know what, though? I'm surprised that, because they went with the rebirth suit, but they didn't put the trunks back.
I was a bit surprised, because they're back in the comics now, aren't they?
They are.
But Young Justice has removed the trunks as well. Interestingly.
Interesting.
That yellow S on back at Kate's like a massive like thing for me. I really want it in the films again. I just love that. I love seeing it on the back of the cape.
Now, let me ask you a question. Do you love the CGI Smallville Superman suit because it's got an S at the back? Is that suit the all-time Superman suit for you?
Oh, of course.
I've heard it's the best Superman suit ever put on film, even though it was never really on film. But anyway. but yeah, that ending, like I said, like the fact that they were able to pay homage to both Snyder's Superman and Donner Superman was great. And there's a post-credit scene that we should talk about where the League is at the Watchtower and they're talking about taking the fight to Darkseid to prepare that, you know, he's coming again. And that we should go, you know, we should take the fight to him. And all of a sudden, Lex comes in and he's like...
Who left the door open? Has held you
on? But he's like, you know, let's get started. Team or whatever he said.
Yes, he's I'm in or something, don't he? Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, and then the cool thing is, he's wearing his costume from the Super Friends.
Yeah, loved that.
But they made it work for modern times.
Yeah.
Because it's got it's got a little bit of that apocalyptic tech.
So I think we know what one of the films is going to be next year, don't we?
I would assume so. Yeah. But I think Hush is going to be in continuity as well.
Yeah, I think Hush is. I don't think Long Halloween is, though, is it? They said that's not going to be, aren't they?
From what I understand, it's not.
Yeah. So I reckon this will be next year.
Yeah, Long Halloween and Red Sun eventually, and even the Justice League versus the Fatal Five.
Well, yeah, which is very much like the Timverse, so I was really excited about that when I saw it.
So with those three being out of continuity, I would think Hush and then
whatever the
Justice League movie involving this is.
Well, I'd assume it's just that. It'll be Darkseid War.
Darkseid War from the comics. Yeah, good point, yeah.
So that's probably what they'll probably call it, that I would assume as well, because it's a pretty sellable title, I would say.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. But yeah, so that's something we have to look forward to. because I think they're definitely going to follow up with that. But is there anything you want to add, or we'll wrap it up and give our grade?
No, just that I went to Pitches to see it, which was it's at cinema, which was really good experience getting to see.
How did that go? What was the crowd reaction like? What was that?
Well, there's only 7 people in there, so. But I think they didn't advertise it very well. So I think if they'd have advertised it a bit better.
Yeah.
But we obviously got both parts. You had a break in between, but annoyingly, when Reign of the Superman started, there was no sound for 5 minutes.
Okay.
So I had to go tell them that there were no sound, and then they fixed it and started it again. But that was that was quite a good experience. I mean, to me, I don't know when I'm going to get to see Superman on the big screen again. So that was like a nice moment for me as a fan, and it's probably my favorite storyline of the comics of Superman in some sense. Not my favorite overall, but these comics have made a huge impact on me when I read them as a kid.
Yeah.
So seeing it animated was quite thrilling, especially on the big screen.
Yeah. No, if I could have gone, I would have, but unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a shame. I think the thing as well, if it had advertised it a bit better, people probably could have planned.
Yeah.
To see it a bit better. And I mean, for me, it was on a Monday night as well, and I would have preferred like a weekend or maybe a bit later in the week.
Yeah, that would have been good.
Yeah.
But no, it was cool that you got to see it in a theater.
Yeah, but on the film itself, no, I think we've pretty much covered everything. I'll just say voice-wise, I thought Cameron Monaghan, who's the Joker on Gotham, he did a great job as Superboy. Chris Williams as Steel. It's all the alumni, isn't it, from the shows that are coming in?
Yeah, they really are. And I think the cool thing was that I knew it was Cameron Monaghan, but not once did I think of Jeremiah or the Joker.
No, he didn't sound anything like him, did it?
And same with Chris Williams. Like, I knew it was him.
Yeah.
The voice was familiar, but I never said, well, that just friggin' sounds like Black Lightning in a steel couch. Never once did I say that. And Jerry O'Connell is a fantastic Superman.
Yeah.
And kudos to Rebecca Romijn and Rainn Wilson. They do a fantastic job. So yeah, let's do final thoughts and a rating right there. So you go first, Steven.
Yeah, I think for me personally, I'm including the comics and BVS and various animated adaptations, that this is the best version of the story for me. The Death and Return of as a combined, I mean, it's going to be coming out as one combined film eventually, in it with some extra footage, which I'm looking forward to. But yeah, I just think this version of the story is probably my favourite of any of them. And they include the comics in that, and I think that's probably the highest praise I could probably give. something, really. When it's better than, I think it's better than the original source of the story. I think it's not. I think Death of Superman was a better film, but I think this was a very complimentary follow-up that was not quite just as good, but almost just as good.
Yeah.
And I'd probably give it an A-.
Okay, cool. For me, I'm going to echo your sentiments that I think it's a better... It works better for me. I like both, but it works better for me in the film than it did in the comics. I think the added Darkseid bit, like I said, really, really bolsters and strengthens the story. I think that it really, as a I love the fact that it gave everybody the spotlight, and it never felt like somebody, you know, one character got shortchanged or what have you. I think it was very well paced, and the story was very well sparsed out to include everybody. I'm going to say that for me, it's because I'm going to count, and you're right, in terms of the Death of Return story, I think it's the best, you know, adaptation. You know, and I'll say that as a movie, if I look at the two parts, much like I do like The Dark Knight Returns, It's right up there with The Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah. These would you stories. Say? Would you say when it, you're going to count this all as one film? Because I sort of do now.
I sort of would, yeah.
Yeah, like The Dark Knight Returns was. Yeah. It was two parts as well, wasn't it? And the combined.
So I mean, those two stories are right up there. I don't know if I'm, you know, where I put them on a list. Maybe one day we'll do that. You know, we'll rank the animated movies. But it's certainly up there with the likes of Under the Red Hood and.
Yeah. Yeah,
Dark Knight Returns and All-Star Superman among my favorites. Like, again,
I suppose the good thing is you can watch them anytime you want, so you don't have to choose which is your favorite to watch them all.
Right, exactly. So it's right up there with the return. Would you
have liked to have seen this happen in live action rather than what we got?
I would have liked. Now you're gonna make me go. You really just have fun like lurking on Twitter, watching me block a bunch of people, don't you? All right. No, here's what I think. I think, look, if Zack Snyder's five movie plan would have been Man of Steel 2, a Batman Superman film, not a
World's Finest.
Not a versus movie, but a Batman like World's Finest.
Yeah.
Okay, then in a Justice League 1, it's still majorly a Superman story, but it's the Death of storyline. And the reason I say in a Justice League 1 is because you want to have the Justice League there to show that, okay, even the Justice League could stop Doomsday. It had to be Superman sacrificing himself. And then a Justice League 2 is like this kind of thing, like told in this style. I think it would have been like, so not even, let's say, Justice League 1 and 2. I think his plan should have been a five movie Superman arc.
Yeah.
Where one is a Batman Superman team up, and then the other two feature the Justice League. Mm. In roles similar to the way they do in these two movies, yeah. I think it would have been a great what is it, quadrilogy? How's that? No, what was the five?
Is it not Quinn? Is it Quinn? Is that right?
Yeah, because quad is four. Yeah. Whatever it is.
Don't ask me.
Had you done Man of Steel 2, World's Finest? Death of Superman with the Justice League present, and Return of Superman with the Justice League present. I think it would have been, had they adapted like this, we wouldn't be in the DC would not be in the situation they are.
No.
And then you know what? After the return, guess what you can do? A proper full-on Justice League movie.
Yeah. See, I would have probably done a Justice League film. And then done this storyline. So, like, you've established the Justice League exists, and then.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what I would have done, obviously. But sure. I'm not getting paid in Hollywood.
So your movie would have been Batman and Superman, then a Justice League thing. And then.
I'd have done Man of Steel. I'd have done Batman versus Superman as a Batman and Superman film where they fight in the middle of the film and team up by the end. But I wouldn't have had Superman die at that point. Then I would have done a Trinity film.
Yeah.
Then I'd have done Justice League, and then I would have done the two Superman films. Obviously, you'd have had other films around, like Wonder Woman and stuff.
Yeah, but what I'm saying
just
is...
Just from Snyder, the Superman, yeah.
Snyder, I would have been fine with Snyder directing all of those.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
I think had they gone this route and adapted these stories the way they did here...
Yeah.
I think it would have been better. It would have been received better, and I think... Because look, Death of Superman and Reign of Superman are better movies than BVS and Justice League. I'm sorry, but they are.
Yeah, 100%.
I think you're bang on there. But at least we have these. My question before we by the way, I would give this, that's all leading to say.
Sorry, I cut you off, didn't I?
Yeah, I would give this a solid A, I'm going to say, you know what? I'm going to give it an 8.
Okay.
I'm going to give it a solid 8. My question to you is, if you had a choice of the before we wrap up, if you had a choice of the following two, let's say they go back and give the like this shared continuity Superman an origin story. Would you A, do the first 5 or 6 issues of Grant Morrison's Action Comics run?
Ooh.
Or would you B, try and work Birthright into this continuity?
Ooh. Can because I cheat and say a little bit of both?
Sure you can. And I think that's what they do.
I think it'll work because this Superman in this universe is it kind of is the new 52 Superman. And this, maybe you do have to do that stuff. In fact, that's got Brainiac. That's too many hard questions.
That would be. Well, we didn't get any questions from the audience, so I had to ask home. But look, I think that Action Comics run would make an like, I love a Birthright origin. Don't get me wrong. If they did it on like an animated.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think the Action Comics run would be unique for fans because it's unlike your typical Superman origin that we're used to.
It's really different. And I think it's absolutely brilliant that origin.
And yeah, give me the one in the, go back. Give me the t-shirt and jeans. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I love that look. I think it was really a clever idea by Grant Morrison.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm gonna go Elon and say that.
So hopefully they do go back and do a prequel and they do that story.
And hire me and Adam to write the next live action Superman film, and then
yeah, I'm done. Yeah, look, you don't have to pay me. I'm a very simple man. Don't pay me. I just want one lunch with Margot Robbie. That's all. I don't ask much. But yeah, my services are free. That's the only caveat I have. So get on that, Warner. Give me a call. We'll set that up. Well, Stephen and I will come in for a meeting and we'll have a chat.
Sounds good to me.
But until we do that chat, that wraps up this episode of the podcast. It was fun. You served as a fantastic co-host, Stephen.
Thank you. I've got experience now, so maybe that's why.
yeah, you're very experienced. Well, if people want to interact with you on social media, where can they do that?
Yeah, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at SteveBob1984, and that's just me rambling about, usually begging Warner Brothers to make another Superman movie. And if you want to listen to my podcast, it's the MBP Movie Podcast, and we're on Podbean, iTunes, and YouTube, and our Twitter is at MBP Movie Pod. And we're going to have you on there, hopefully. Well, I was hoping for next month, maybe, or
yes, I'm, something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm down for that. Let's do it. I've been looking forward to come on.
Look forward to having you on, yeah.
can't wait for that. So follow him on those platforms and listen to the podcast. Him and his brother do a great job. And listening makes you feel like part of the family with the stories they tell of the childhood and all that stuff. So,
obviously, I'm the better brother of the two.
I'll be way around. Well, I gotta come on both, and your brother's probably listening to this. So I'll tell you the answer off air, but listen to it. It's a great podcast.
Thank you.
And if you want to get in touch with me, you can do so on Twitter at Superhero Sci-Fi. You can join the Tales from DC Multiverse Facebook page and we will add you. You can also read my Tales from DC Multiverse articles, which I have to go write the next one after we're done here, on Revenge of the Fans. So those are the ways you can get in touch with me. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and whether you're listening to this during the week or on a weekend, we hope you have a good one. And until next time, so long, everybody.